at that same number as Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. No, Sandy, Ukraine and you know, to just envision the fact that while we're sitting here on the air and that there are people fighting, you know, ground wars, right? Major ground war. I can't even envision that. I mean, I always think back again to, you know, those great old army movies, military movies, and I remember you even talking about this one in this real war, and you were talking about, for the first time, you're going to see these crumpled buildings, these buildings that have been brought down to rubble in real life, in true life, right? You know, you see those in the 50s movies, and, you know, you don't think much of it, but that's when you finally realize that hand-to-hand, it's not hand-to-hand combat yet, but just that kind of thing, where there's not a lot of movement, but a lot of destruction. That's just where they are now, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the sort of urban combat that was had in Kyiv, which
probably, it's still going on.
Well, no, that probably favored the Ukrainians because it was unknown turf, and now what they've got is much more like artillery warfare, which is more distant, less hand-to-hand, more about sort of destroying wide areas,
yeah.
So that and this is where the Russian artillery might is providing them with significant advantages.
They have more artillery, I remember reading, than the United States.
Yeah, they have more artillery than anyone in the world. And so, you know, it's a war, and the war is going to go the way that it goes, and it's ultimately there's going to be a center of gravity in the war that's going to favor people who have strategic advantages. Manpower-wise, it's going to be relatively close because, as we were saying off the air, Ukraine forbade the emigration of men, I think, any younger than 65 from the country because they understood that manpower was going to be an important asset and that it would be important that many men be available to fight in the war. I think they have now a head count of potentially 1 million people committed to the military and armed to varying degrees. Russia, you know, it's not an advantage. Certainly, it's always a disadvantage to be a country at war. And the country attacked and defending itself has a great deal more public support, possibly, than a country that is pursuing a war for its for ideological or political purposes, but not on its home turf. And so the political problems Russia has with respect to raising its army and creating a high manpower necessary potentially for this war is different than that faced by Ukraine. In Russia, one goes through the military, young men all go through the military in a draft process, but then they are all exposed to the military for essentially their whole entire life and can get called up in the same manner that we call up our National Guard. Here, the National Guard commitment might be for 6 or 8 years. In Russia, it's for essentially their adult life out through what was, I think, age 40, and now I think it's age 60 or 65. Politically, Putin is going to be reluctant to call up all of those folks because of the real impact that will have on so many people inside the country, and they'll begin to scratch their head and maybe ask more questions about why. I think the prognosis for the war is that it's going to go a little differently than the world thought. I continue to believe that the long-term outcome from the war is going to be as I thought it was going to be, which is that ultimately Russia will prevail in getting most of all the things that it wanted before it began the war, neutrality of Ukraine, recognition of Crimea as being its own, and some differential in status for the Donbas region, Luhansk and Donetsk. And I think that is ultimately going to happen. But there's apparently going to be a great deal of bloodshed and physical damage that's going to occur in the interim. And in large part, I think that's because of the enablement that's occurred for the Ukrainians to resist what is what I think is inevitable.
You know, Sandy, I remember when they were massing at the border, the Russians, and having been through a couple world wars, they know what real war is, right? The Russian people, you know, their forebears knew what real war was, and Putin knew what real war was, and he knew when he made a commitment that is no turning back. Right. And so they're in it for the long haul, whatever it takes, however long it takes, whatever the resources, whatever the manpower, whatever it is they have to use. They're in it for the end of it. Right. I mean,
well, I think so. I think the question is, what is the end? And you know, what is the negotiated settlement that would be satisfactory? You know, it is true that much like the United States left Vietnam unsuccessfully, Russia left Afghanistan unsuccessfully. And so it's not clear. But the question is, what is the principle that Russia is fighting about with respect to Ukraine? And I do think that there, the principle is much different than the principle that involved the conflict they had in Afghanistan. And the principle in Ukraine, at least from the standpoint of the people making the decisions, Putin and whoever else works with him on that, they believe that they were dealing with existential issues, existential to Russia. And they believe that it involved a problem created by NATO and NATO's presence. Whether we think that's a rational outcome, the important thing is whether they thought it was rational and whether they were being rational when they developed their concerns. And I think there's a case to be made.
So, Sandy, if you follow that way of thinking, then you would say that Russia at no point is ever going to be just satisfied with Ukraine.
No, I think that's not true. I think that to the extent that they could get a satisfactory outcome in Ukraine that would assure Ukraine's neutrality, and if they could get NATO to back down on the sanctions, for instance, this risk to the Kaliningrad that I talked about last week, Kaliningrad, this enclave on the Baltic that is separate, that is Russian but separate from Russia, that puts at risk the concept of that puts at risk the flow of materials to Kaliningrad and puts at risk the notion that Russia and Lithuania could be in combat with one another over the opening of the Salwiki corridor there. If that could all be cleared up, and the long-term and short-term risk of that kind of problem more or less eliminated, then I'm not sure that Russia would have any stake in doing anything more than what they've done. But to the extent that they would feel that the pincer is on and that they are going to be isolated, not just with economic sanctions, but with embargoes and blockades, then they might feel differently.
So I'm trying to see this, Sandy, from the perspective of Zelensky. And Zelensky, I'm assuming that he's thinking, look at what they've done. Okay, look at what's happened to this country, to my country. And I'm not going to accept, you know, any of the things for the most part. We haven't gone into Russia, sent a few rockets there, but little or no damage has been done internally to Russia. Look at what they've done. They've devastated our nation. I'm in no hurry.
Well,
you can't have that kind of thought when you're...
Well, he might have that kind of thought, but he probably also knows...
It could get worse.
Well, no. that he probably also knows that he could have negotiated, and I think he was interested in negotiating. My understanding is that conservatives in his government made it clear to him that he would not be supported in a negotiation with Russia. But I'm pretty confident that he knows that he could have negotiated a settlement when he was surrounded by Russia but not invaded by Russia. He could have settled for neutrality, recognition of the annexation of Crimea, and some clarification that went beyond the agreement that had been reached with respect to the Donbas region, because there had been an agreement reached about an autonomous status for those regions in the agreement that was reached in 2014 at an earlier time that Ukraine had signed on to. So you can say that he might have that thought process now, but he also probably also carries some guilty knowledge that he could have settled without the invasion for things that he might well be called upon to settle for now.
And history will bear that out. I mean, there's nothing that we see now or he can say now or anybody else can say other than we hear people talking about how great a man he is, that he's resisted. You know, and him personally, he gets a lot of accolades from the rest of the world, but to what expense? You know,
yes.
is what that comes down to. And I know.
Well, to what expense, and at what expense, and to what outcome? I mean, what is the ultimate outcome going to be? And what was the expense born for the difference? You know, what difference did that the expense borne by Ukraine make in that outcome? And so, you know, my view is, again, based on this realpolitik concept of pragmatics. And from a pragmatic standpoint, I think that Zelensky's decision-making process here needs to be called into question.
So, Sandy, when we get back, I want to talk with you and change the subject about the state Supreme Court and some decisions that they made about elections, if we can. The decisions about the drop boxes, all these other things, and what your thoughts are. 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams in the studio. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Who do we have on the line? Okay. Just put them on. Who
do we? It's CJ from Skokie.
CJ, why do you have all of these different aliases, man? CJ.
That's just his caller ID.
Oh, I don't know. He's got all these different names. Just say CJ, man, if I see you. You know, anyway.
You guys call me a lot of names, Earl, but...
Hey, man, I don't know, man. I'm looking. Just go by CJ, man. You don't have to, you know. So what's going on?
Well, as I listen to you, it's nice for you guys to rewrite history, how we got in Ukraine, because... I think if you were a veteran and you served, you won't forget how we got in Ukraine.
Wait a minute. So you think veterans know how we got in? What do you mean we got in Ukraine? We're not in Ukraine physically.
Well, the FUPA is that even the president told the soldiers that in Poland that you'll see it when you go there. So this commander-in-chief got us to Ukraine because of his failed policy and
here we go again.
So you guys, you know, you sidestep that. Putin didn't invade.
Hey, let me ask you something. What happened in Afghanistan have to do with Ukraine? Can you connect that for us, please?
Very easily. First off, Obama did nothing with Assad in Syria with the red line, and Putin.
What does that have to do with Afghanistan? I'm asking you. I'm telling you.
I'll get to that.
Well, we don't have all day.
It's under a Democrat president. Obama was president. And then Putin saw exactly how Trump wanted to go to zero in Afghanistan, too. But he listened to his military advisors, and he didn't. He kept the security force there. There wasn't famine the way it is now.
Hey, CJ, if I remembered right, I think there were 16,000 troops in Afghanistan. That wasn't strong enough to prevent anything from happening in Afghanistan.
That's because he responded to the invasion. And come on, Earl. This is going to be so easy to be written in history. And the fact that Putin did not invade. Remember, the sanctions were meant, or maybe not from the president's point of view now, to deter Putin. They didn't. He went in anyways. And what was Biden's response? Another thing that you always misrepresent is that Trump wanted out of NATO. He didn't want out of NATO. He wanted countries to pay their fair share, and he got them to do
that. Whoa. CJ, I think it's better that you attribute to people things they've actually ever said or represented. That's a representation. That's called a straw man argument when you say things like that. So I've never heard anyone suggest that they think that Donald Trump wanted out of NATO.
Trump said he wanted to go to zero, and he listened.
Wanted out of NATO. CJ, you just that's okay.
Sandy,
you said Trump, you said to, well,
I'll
you just
guys misrepresent what is said.
No, you. Oh my goodness, everyone just heard this. You said that we misrepresented Donald Trump by suggesting that he wanted out of NATO, and you said no, what Donald Trump wanted was for NATO countries to pay their part. And I don't think there's ever been a discussion of any of that on this radio station.
Well that's sad, because it's true. Trump did want to go.
Well, you just okay.
He threatened to leave NATO. He never wanted out of NATO. He threatened to leave because countries were not.
So what does that have to do with the price of tea in China? Putin decided to invade because Joe Biden is weak. That's basically what you're saying.
He watched us give up. Who's got Bagram Air Force Base right now, Earl and Sandy?
What does that have to do?
Well, I can tell you someone who doesn't have it, and that's Vladimir Putin. He doesn't have Bagram Air Force Base.
No, he's working with China, right, Sandy?
Well,
China's on Putin's side, is he not?
I'm not sure that's true. Actually, I'm not sure what this conversation is, where it's getting us, actually.
No, I know, because you guys deflect from the facts. Are we trying to defend Ukraine from Russia? Are we spending billions and billions of dollars in Ukraine because of the invasion of Russia? How much equipment did we leave back in Afghanistan? How many lives were lost in Afghanistan? You guys seem to forget.
Not many. Not many. Not many. Not many. You asked the question, how many lives were lost in Afghanistan? In all the years we were there, not very many.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a full-out war, right?
It's sad. So not so many is okay with you. I mean, come on. Those are our soldiers, Earl. And 13 of them died in a debacle that we watched on TV live.
Listen, man, they're just as.
You guys maybe forgot it, but the voters won't.
Well,
history is written. It can't be rewritten the way you gentlemen want to rewrite it. Afghanistan happened. Putin saw it, and he said, "You know what? It's time to move." As he built up and built up and
speaking of time to move, thank you very much, CJ.
Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Yeah. What do we accomplish with that phone call, Sandy?
Nothing that we haven't accomplished day after day.
And I've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Early Show. Sandy Williams is here. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. In the studio, Sandy Williams is Sandy Williams on Mondays. Let's go to the phone line and Curtis from West Dallas. Hey, Curtis, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, Earl, how you doing? Hey, right. Sandy, it's awesome to hear you again.
Yes, sir.
I just want to say, with CJ calling, I mean, he keeps on hit by repeating himself about Biden being weak. My mistake is it takes United States is a big team. We're not just one person. Biden is just not one. He's one president, but he's not one person. We have a lot of entities to build it up. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's a lot of continuity.
Curtis? Listen, man, don't let CJ get under your skin, man. It's tough enough for me and Sandy to, you know, he is who he is, right? And he can't help himself. So he's limited in what he can talk about and what he can say. So that's where he is. But don't let him bother you anymore, man. I've long since learned to accept who he is and not expect any different conversation than what he's limited to talk about. He can't help it.
Oh, no, well, the whole thing is all talking. A lot of it, what he's saying is all talking points. It's kind of sad. But the one thing I love about your radio station is you put everybody on the radio, no matter who they are, what they say. So I think that's plus for you guys, you know?
Hey, man, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Sandy Tom is back. They can't resist CJ. Maybe we need to. CJ is following what I used to do. I used to be CJ.
Well, I doubt that. don't sell yourself short. Don't sell yourself short.
Right. Okay, Tom, go ahead.
All right, Earl. What I'd like to say is that CJ probably is going to blame Biden or Obama on the price of tea in China, since you brought that up, knowing him. I'm really, really thankful for CJ because I don't have to listen to right-wing radio because he basically just spews out everything that they say in about 5 minutes. So thanks for that, CJ. And I think we ought to come up with a nickname for CJ. Different aliases.
I think I'll pass on that.
Parrot. Uh-huh. I like to call him Parrot. The Parrot.
Yeah. Well, he's...
He just says whatever they say on right-wing radio. He repeats it. So we should just call him the parrot.
Hey, Tom, I got to run, man. Thank you very much for the car. Really appreciate it. You know, Sandy, I wanted to talk before we get out of here about the decisions that were made last week with the state Supreme Court that basically all sided with what's in the best interest of Republicans when it comes to elections and voting. And I shouldn't say that because there are some Republicans who vote early and who took advantage of, you know, the boxes and all of those kinds of things. To act as if that was solely just something that Democrats did is not true. That was put in place, and everybody had an opportunity, Republicans as well as Democrats.
Well, I don't think the Supreme Court didn't rule. I don't think that the
drop boxes themselves,
that the drop boxes invalidated the votes in the prior election. I think they had to do with the capacity of the rulemaking capacity of the Election Commission to declare such things going forward. And, you know, that's a matter of law and legal question. And I'm not sure that we can stand up and shout and say it was glaringly wrong. And I think the issue is whether people are playing by the rules as the rules have been announced and the rules of the game when you're playing the game. And that's the drop boxes were okay, according to the rules of the game at the time of the election. And I think drop boxes make a lot of sense anyway. But the question is just, how do you decide and how should Wisconsin decide in the future if they want to implement drop boxes, and how must that be carried out in the future?
Well, you know, Sandy, again, drop boxes aren't just for Democrats. They're for everybody.
Right. So, that's the question of whether the rule of the game was fair. The rules of the game were fair. But the question the Supreme Court was addressing is, how should the rules of the game be implemented, and can drop boxes be implemented in the way they were implemented in that contest? And they came down on the negative side on that. They didn't say the drop boxes were invalid for the prior election. They just said
henceforward,
that process, it can't be implemented in that way. And so, okay, that's the way it's going to be.
You know, I don't know.
I mean, we haven't had drop boxes in the past.
Right.
For many elections. So, you know.
Here's what I think, Sandy. I honestly think that because they've done away with the drop boxes now, to think that people are going to say, well, oh, I'm not going to vote because they won't allow us to use drop boxes. I think the opposite is going to happen. The people who are going to be outraged enough that they've done everything to try to take away our rights to do this, it's going to backfire.
Well, I think the fact that it's part of the complete attention that's being focused, particularly by the conservatives, on how voting is accomplished and all of the ways that they're trying to restrict the ways that it can be easily accomplished is what's going to excite people into voting. The drop boxes is one of the issues, but it's symptomatic of all of the issues that they've decided to focus so much time and energy and money upon. And I do think that's going to backfire. I hope it does.
Yeah, you know, to somehow think that we've got all of these people who are committing these voting crimes, and you know, all of a sudden this is the case. I remember going back, Sandy, 20 years when the argument was, well, they're giving cigarettes out for people to vote. You remember those?
Yeah.
Republicans were saying they're people who are giving out this is what they're doing, and they're offering food, and they're offering listen, people have a right to vote in this country. It's as been stated over and over again, one of the most important things of our nation.
Well, incidentally, when President Trump talks about all the voter fraud that has occurred, and when people talk about it, they can't even come up with examples like cigarettes or anything whatsoever. Food? Nope. You know, at one point, there was a discussion about whether people should be offered water while they're standing in line
yes.
to vote.
Which was, now all of a sudden, no.
And I mean, it's not like people were being enticed to come and vote by being the promise of being given water. That wasn't even the it was just like these people are being enabled to stand in line because they're being given water while they stand in line. It's like, okay.
So my whole thought about all of that is, and I remember because they narrowed down the places where people could vote. It's steaming outside, and there are elderly people standing in line, yeah. And you offer them water. And how is that, you know, turned into, well, these people are illegally voting?
Well, I mean, you know, the notion and the old assertions about offering cigarettes or food was that people were lured into voting, right. Essentially bribed into voting by a promise of something, okay?
Right.
And there's been no suggestion of that whatsoever in all of these national allegations of rampant fraud, and no one has come up with a single anecdote about, or an example of any such thing. You know, the theories were all wild theories about maverick computer chips.
Yeah.
Inserted into voting machines on a conspirational basis by some company that was in cahoots with the Democrats.
Truckloads of people, truckloads of ballots coming up and being dropped off. We saw those and under the table.
So anyway, the point is that we shouldn't even waste our breath talking about a voter fraud, which has only been the subject of hot air and has not been the subject of one single bit of hard evidence. You know, I think of all of this, they've been able to come up with, you know, probably under 100 cases of people who voted in multiple districts or did some such thing.
Let's go to Bob. Hey, Bob, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, Earl. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've been listening for most of the morning, and it's my first chance to call in. And I think we've got the wealthiest have a misunderstanding of how things work. Well, they gather money to themselves. The CEOs seem to make more than 300 times what the hourly wage of their employees, average hourly wage of the employees is. But if they take their wealth and took a substantial amount of it and poured it back in to the economy, took care of the poorest of the poor and their employees, that money will come back to them so fast it would be unbelievable. Because that's the way things, the money spent will go right straight back in the economy, because the poorest of the poor have no choice but to spend the money. And then when they spend the money, it'll go right back in the economy.
Well, actually, Bob, interestingly, what you've described is the whole reason for the failure of the trickle-down effect that Ronald Reagan was selling to the public and his economists selling.
Exactly.
Because the poor do spend their money and the rich invest their money, and invested money doesn't come back into the economy in the same manner. When I buy a stock, on the stock market, it has almost nothing to do with a job anyplace. Because I'm not investing that money in the business. I am simply buying the stock that has already been purchased by someone and invested in the business. And I'm just paying a higher price for it and creating value for some other asset holder. So,
And you're just feeding wealth to that person you bought it from.
Yeah, so, you know, I think what we need to do is the wealthy just need to get a sense of how good this community has been to them, so that they can turn around and feel generous and positive about the taxes they might be asked to pay, which I think is a small payback.
Say, Bob, before we get out of here and go to a break, what do you think of what Sandy and I do, the content of our show and what we talk about?
Well, I think it's just fine. I would respond also that when we send military to do something, that we've already lost. We win when diplomacy wins. Diplomacy is the way to go. Military is...
Hey, Bob.
It's not the way to go.
Bob, we got to go. Hang on, John. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Let's go to the phone lines and Jack from Merrimack. Hey, Jack, how you doing, man?
Thanks. I just had a couple thoughts about our wonderful state Supreme Court.
Go ahead.
It seems like at least three times they have entirely ignored the state constitution, at least three times. First of all, the Republican designed Wisconsin Elections Commission was charged with the duty of making election rules, not the Supreme Court. And so the court basically legislated from the bench. They said, yep, we're going to make the rules, not the legislature and not their designated representatives. But even earlier than this, first of all, when Walker and the Republicans rammed through this lame duck session where they basically ignored the separation of powers and said, yep, the attorney general and the governor of the state have to get authorization from the legislature essentially before they can do anything on their own. And that, of course, violates the Constitution because there's supposed to be a separation of powers there. One is not supposed to be dependent upon the other. And finally, this is the worst, when they basically overruled the governor's veto on the gerrymandered maps. And I would still argue that the current maps are probably unlawful. If you look at the voting rights laws, when they cut down the number of majority-minority districts from 6 to 5, when there was an increase in the number of minority people in those districts, I mean, they're doing essentially the same thing that the U.S. Supreme Court is. They're legislating from the bench. So that I'm not a lawyer,
Sandy is. Let's yep. see Sandy's response.
Well, I won't disagree that both the National Supreme Court, the U.S., and the state Supreme Court have become very outcome oriented and have become very policy outcome oriented, which strikes me as sounding a great deal like, and in fact being a great deal like, legislating from the bench, in spite of the fact that the conservatives would suggest that that's the last thing in the world that a court should do. In fact, they've attacked liberal courts across the country for that very same thing. With respect to the gerrymandering, I happen to think that the gerrymandering issue is very, very complicated, and is complicated a great deal by the geopolitical realities of how the Democrats demographically are currently located, being very, very densely populated in urban areas and very, very sparsely located in more rural areas, and that is a very big culprit in the outcomes that we're getting at the statehouse level across the country, because it makes it a great deal harder to draw district lines that will result in anything like the same balance headcount in an assembly as you get in a statewide context.
But Sandy, those districts, I mean, the fact that the breakdown of these areas with people of color being in the urban areas and the other in the rural areas has always been the case in Wisconsin. Why is it different now?
Well, because the rural areas were not so
voting red. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's okay. Been my point. That right. The Democratic Party has become highly concentrated in urban voters, and it didn't used to be the case. Wisconsin Rapids, La Crosse, Wausau, Green Bay, Eau Claire. All of the city centers around the state were blue in the days gone by, and no longer the case.
Jack?
Yeah, there is truth in that. But if you really are looking for, and of course the Republicans aren't, but if you're really looking for one person, one vote, yes, it's complicated to draw those lines appropriately. It seems that even Governor Evers had some difficulty getting some kind of proportional representation.
Yes,
and that, really believes that's in the one reason. Person, one vote.
Well, that's the reason, my assertion is that the Democratic Party has a job to do, and one of them is to be vigilant about how district lines are drawn. But the other, much more important job, is to reach out to and deal with spreading. The support for their party back to rural areas so there's a natural outcome from this density of population, which is a disproportionate representation in the assemblies.
Yeah, that's definitely a case. And I know in Minnesota, the Democratic Party is known as the Democratic Farm Labor Party because they do have a strong contingency in the rural areas in the farming community. And Wisconsin's Wisconsin's Democratic Party absolutely has to address that too.
Hey, Jack, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. You know, Sandy, what's transpired? Do we misunderstand the role of the Supreme Court, do you think? Has it changed over the years?
Well, yes, I think it has. And to some extent, I think the Supreme Court has always been in a position to have an impact on societal issues. And the Supreme Court has always reflected some ideological views. As you go back in time, you can see that there were Supreme Courts that were willing to support Jim Crow laws. There were Supreme Courts that were willing to support separate but equal. There were Supreme Courts that looked at things in different ways depending on the social outlook of the court itself and the political outlook of the court itself. So has it changed? I'm not sure it's changed so much as that the impact of it periodically is much more visible to us and much more obvious to us, as it, to the extent that it doesn't reflect maybe the sense of the moral fiber of the country or the social political outlook of the country.
All right. Got to go. Got to leave it there. Thank you very much. Thank all of you for listening. Thank you, Sandy, as always. You and I will reconnect on this coming Friday. Everybody, enjoy yourself. Thank you. Connor, man. Thank
come on,
you.
Earl.
Yeah. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.